Al Hyundai. And last night, the National League won the All-Star game via swing-off after being tied 6-6 through nine innings. I friggin' loved it. I thought it was great. I had a great time last night. It was Goosey's galore. So if you guys missed it, shame on you. Kyle Stowers, he got to go in there. He was first up for the National League. He got a homer after striking out twice. See, good for him, right? Because it's like Kyle Stowers starts his first two at-bats, strikes out. Now, he always remember, hey, I helped win the swing-off. He's part of history, baby. Stower power. But it was funny when they go to that. He goes, I'm kind of nervous. You guys sure you don't want to go with somebody else? He's like, me?
Me?
Me? Stowers? So, it was fun, though. Really great. Marlins will resume play on Friday, hosting Patrick Mahomes' Kansas City Royals.
I tell you what, they go get back at it quick, don't they?
They do. Time to get after it.
Does basketball do it that quick?
Basketball used to do it that quick, and then they wanted a longer break. So they got like a week off. And the All-Star game's only gotten worse. They got to do something about it. I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know what the right answer is. That because I understand why nobody wants to do international competitions. Everybody gets hurt. But, God, I love them so much. They're so much fun. The Four Nations was amazing. I love World Baseball Classic, even though that's before the season. It's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, I understand the owners not wanting to do it. You don't want anybody hurt. But they're so much fun. Like, I can't wait for Eurobasket. I'm so excited for Eurobasket to watch Team Sweden and Italy. So great. This stuff is fun.
How about the Four Nations?
I loved the Four Nations. Who didn't love the Four Nations? Now, did it cost us Kachuk for the season? It did, but...
Yeah, but then we got Marchand.
We got Marchand! We got Marchand and we got Seth Jones! Wink! The Miami Dolphins, according to Marcel Louis-Jacques from ESPN, they have promoted Chandler Henley to run game specialist. He was teammates with Mike McDaniel at Yale in the early 2000s. Coached at Vanderbilt, the Titans, and the Falcons before joining Miami in 2022. That from ESPN.
I don't
ESPN.
Care what who's doing it. They better do it with a certain attitude.
Chandler Henley sounds like Yale.
Chandler. Sounds like he hangs out with Wyndham Clark.
He does sound like he hangs out with Wyndham Clark. Well, let me tell you something, Chandler. You better fix this run game, dude, okay? Mr. Specialist, fix it! I need somebody to go in there. I need this line to get right. And I need action early. No team needs a fast start like the Miami Dolphins this season, Leroy. I mean, people are going to jump off a bridge if this team starts off 1-3. Hell, 0-2. Hell, 0-1. This team needs a fast start, dude. They do. I'm not telling you. Made fun of me last year when I said week two against the Bills was a statement game. And
yes, I
couldn't be more right because it was, and it set the tone for the entire season. Not just because Tua got hurt, but also because Tua got hurt. And this year, you start Patriots, Colts. Could you imagine an 0-2 start if they don't beat those teams? They should beat those teams. If you don't beat those two teams, going into Buffalo, so it's basically Buffalo for the season. Like, if you were to do that, oh, my God, I'm already stressed. I'm already stressed thinking about it. Just because... I don't want this thing to be over because we miss football, right? You want to just get in there and you want to snort up football and you want to be excited. Could you know, and everybody's already down, right? But no matter what, football will always provide, right? It'll always in the fall time, you may not have anything, but we got football.
Yep.
But right now everybody's very sensitive on edge words. If they go into this thing and yak it up, oh, people are going to be, I mean, they're going to be so mad, Leroy.
So My question to you is, does it matter how they look, or all you care about is the results?
Early on?
Because here's the thing. I hate when sports, and we look back on it as something other than that. And I'm not saying, look, when the season starts, here's what I need to see. I need to see something definitive that you change the way you've been doing things, right? That you are being more consistent on first and second downs with how you run offense. And if I see that, because here's the deal. The better you are on first and second down, the more explosive those weapons on the outside become. But when you're in second and 13, second and 12, and that secondary backs up and says, keep everything in front of me, right? And then your offensive line is not giving you time to pick them apart. That is going to be the same problem they had the last couple of years when they haven't had success. So I'm really interested to see. And again, I don't care what title anybody gets. It's a fundamental team thing that has to get better. And you can put a name on it, you can put a person on it or whatever. But if that mindset doesn't change, I don't care who's the coach. I don't care who's the run coordinator. I don't care who's the offensive coordinator. You're going to have the same results.
It's the thing, though, is like they have, you know, this new line that's coming together, and they don't even feel like they, like, you're not going to, they're not going to get time to gel because, unfortunately, the crimes of the past teams already has everybody on edge. Probably the owner, too, because right. I bet you if that owner gets off to an, like, if they get off to, I don't think Stephen Ross is going to have a ton of patience for this. I don't think he is. I think he's fed up. I get him being fed up. I would be fed up, too. Kai Finn says that Kentucky Finn. Oh, that's what Kai stood for this whole time.
Huh. Oh, my goodness.
Thanks, dude. I didn't realize it.
Oh, my goodness. What?
It was lowercase, dude. I didn't know if it was K. You didn't know. Don't act like you knew what his name stood for. Kentucky Finn's five. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You had no idea. Do not lie. I'm not going to let you do that. Anyway, Kentucky Finn says in the chat, this fan base is on the brink of civil war, dude. We will eat each other alive if we stink four games in. I think he's right. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to eat each other alive. I think everyone's going to then unite and be like, it's going to be streets need a body, to coin Vlad's term. Like, it's going to be, I need somebody fired if it's a 1-3 stinker to start the season.
Yeah, but I think it has to be put in context. Like, if they look bad, it is what it is, right? If they look bad, it is what it is. But if you see improvement and things happen that they don't win a couple of games, but you like the direction of the team, there's really no reason to change.
You think that people are going to be reasonable if they go out there and run for 150 and lose 9-6?
People aren't going to, and I don't expect them to. I'm just saying the powers that be have to, you know, be more realistic about where they are. Not the fans. The fans are going to be the fans. I understand that, right? One of the things that me and you get into arguments with all the time is why you believe things happen and why things are happening. You understand what I'm saying? Because you look at it from a fan's perspective, and I look at it like constructually, how it's constructed, how things put together, why are they not having success?
Yeah, but the way you're saying it, though, is if they go out there and start off 2-0, but we're able to do it with razzle-dazzle, you're not going to be impressed.
No, because it's going to catch up to them like it has for the last 3 years.
I don't know, dude.
Like, stop!
What?
You know why this has come to a screeching halt.
Hold on one second.
In all of the last 3 years.
You, for your entire life with me, has been like, just take the win, baby. Be happy. You've literally told me that every show.
I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that if you win with a whole bunch of razzle-dazzle in the beginning of the year, when you start playing these teams that are the elite of the AFC, right, that junk ain't going to fly. And so I'm thinking, how can this team be successful throughout the whole year? Not for a couple of games where you have some trickery. So, yeah, I will be happy that they're 2-0. But I will also say this isn't sustainable. And I have proof. You have 3 years of proof that when it got down to crunch time and you had to play the Buffaloes, when you had to play the Ravens, when you have to play the Kansas City Chiefs, when you have to play the elite teams in the AFC, you weren't physical enough to compete with them. So they start off 5-0. I'm going to tell you whether it's sustainable or not. Oh, okay, I like what we're doing here. I like the way they're running the ball. They're being physical on first and second down. It's opening up a lot of things. Then you can use your trickery, right? But it all starts on first and second down. They've been horrible, horrible on first and second down, and I've never seen a team that has more second and 13s, second and 12s, every stinking week.
He loves the pitch. Like, just pitch it backwards.
Right.
Let's
So, even if they win with a little trickery,
mm-hmm.
it's still going to have context, because what fans want is them to be able to win a game in January, December, in the playoff game. So, if I see that all they're doing is trickery and there's no fundamental football, they're not establishing the run, they're not playing physical up front, I'm going to say it. I don't care what the record is. This is not what the goal is. The goal is to have sustainable football in December and January.
Yeah, but they're also at this. They're also at a weird point. Like, do you think McDaniel's really going to lean into that when you're on the hot seat, or is he going to go with what he knows? Because here's the thing: if you're trying to work something right and try and work something new, that's usually a process. And when your cheeks are burning because you're on the hot seat, is he going to trust that? Like, is he really going to go to that, or is he going to go with what he knows will work, which is, hey, let's do screens and bubble screens to Achan and to Waddle and to Tyreek. And it's going to look great because, honestly, they don't really have a hard schedule to start the season other than Buffalo.
But here's the problem. The football that you've seen him, the style of football you've seen him play, is not the style of football that got him here. That's my biggest argument of all this, is that you're saying he's going to go back to Old Faithful. Old Faithful has been running the hell out of the football.
No, but I'm not counting 49ers. He's the boss here. Whatever Shanahan did doesn't count. Where he's the boss and calling plays counts.
But you understand, and let me be clear, when you played and coached in a certain system from Atlanta to Cleveland to San Fran, okay, one of the reasons why people bring you in is because they like the style of football that they've seen in all those places, right?
Yeah, Leroy, that's not why he got the job. He got the job to fix Tua. He didn't get the job because he was a running style quarterback, because of the style of offense. Like, he got the job because he felt that he could convince them that their broken quarterback he could fix, which, in fairness, statistically, he did. But that's not that his identity of the team is not why he got the job.
All right.
He claims he believes in it, but I mean, Leroy, what should we be? What he used to be part of, or what his teams have done?
Again, most coaches have the same basic concept that they came from, right?
Mm-hmm.
They may change it up a little bit. But when you say this coach has been part of a team that likes to play physical up front and run the football, okay, that's what you bring him in for. Now, he may change that up a little bit, but what I'm saying to you is the football that he's been associated with and that you associate him with has not been the football that we've seen here after the first year. And so from that standpoint, yeah, you can say the trick. I'm telling you this. I believe that the trickery and all that outside stuff has come from the lack of confidence in the offensive line.
You mean the one they're laughing at us about for years?
They were. They were.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
So I think he overcoached the situation. Because, listen, I may think that I play with a player that can't do something, that doesn't have – we say that about quarterbacks all the time. He doesn't have the arm to do this. He doesn't have the arm to do that, right? It doesn't mean you don't try. It doesn't mean that you give the defense an advantage by saying, oh, we know this quarterback doesn't have a strong arm, so – we're just going to load up the box.
No, they completely you know, rolled over to the defenses last year, trying
right.
to take
it away. That's my point. And he's come from a place, and the places that he's come from, they all ran the football. The football that I'm seeing out of him is not something that I've seen in all the other places he came from.
Yeah, but why are you taking his past more so than what you've seen from him? I don't understand that. Like, why do you have – I'm not disagreeing with you. Just to be clear.
Right.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just asking, why do you have this belief he's going to go back to something where he was, where we have seen him in charge and having the most control over the game plan and personnel – this is what he's decided. He's picked that. So why should we have faith that he's going to get back to some grassroots of running the football when that's not what he thought led to success down here?
Because if you're smart and you're a coach, you're going to realize a lot more than I'm telling you how unsustainable that is. It's not sustainable. You can start off the season that way. Then as soon as the leaves start falling and it starts getting a little chilly and you got to play in the elements, it doesn't work. And so every year at the end of the year, you have the same problem. Why? Because you don't run the football. You're not physical up front. Now, when you hire a coach based on the offenses that you've seen him a part of, the winning football, and what has won in the previous spots he's been at. It is shocking to me how this team looks nothing like that, either because of the players you have, either because the coaching that, you know, what the coach thinks of how he should be successful or how he wants to change it up or whatever. I get all that. But where we are right now, you might have a great first 8 weeks. But soon as the fall comes, soon as the weather gets a little iffy and you need to run the football, if you can't, it's going to be the same thing that you had 2 years ago. I wouldn't even use last year. 2 years ago, where you get to the end of the season, every team is honing in on their run game and being physical up front, and you can't compete with them. I'm not the only one that feels this way. I'm not the only one that has seen over the past few years, soon as the weather changes, the first thing that everybody in the nation says is this team is soft.
Yeah, but my contention is I don't think he's got another move up his sleeve. I think when we say that he came from those places, Like, I think he brought with what he believes in. And I don't necessarily know that he's going to have this process type. Because I feel like what you're saying takes a process. You're going to have a young line, young backs to start going through this and becoming that. And if you start off 0-2, are you going to believe in that? Or are you going to go back to what he relied on, which is razzle dazzle?
You want to hear an incredible thing about football and young players?
Mm.
It's easier to run block than pass block. It's easier to be the aggressor when you're young than be on your heels. That's a fact.
I hope so. Because he's going to have he's going to have a lot of pressure cranked up on these first 6 weeks.
Sure he is. Sure he is. But there's a couple of ways to coach. You can coach defensively. That means that you forecast everything that the defense is going to do and you try to coach accordingly. Or if you look at the teams that are successful, we're going to do us and we'll adjust when you stop it.
Timbo Slice says, the man won't stop throwing fades to 5-6 wide receivers. You think he's capable of change?
Yes. Yes, I do. Like, when you call somebody a good football coach, it means they have the ability to recognize and adjust. I think we think of him as this offensive guru that he tried to outsmart everybody.
Yeah, to Cooteville.
Right, exactly.
We'll take a break. More to come here on the show. Back after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Tobin and Leroy here with you, 560 WQAM. Take you guys up until 2 here on the program. You believe Mike McDaniel turn around, Brittany? You feeling confident, or is no, or ye of little faith in the adorable little nerd?
I have ye little faith. I kind of agree with you, Tobin, in the sense that like he is in the hot seat right now, and he's gonna grasp at anything he has. And all we've been proven with this team is that the trickery works, because when he tries to do fundamental football, it just doesn't work. And with a young offensive line, I just don't see a world where we're not going to get back to that trickery. And like Leroy said, it's not sustainable.
Yeah, I just
I just think with young offensive linemen, the way to get them comfortable is run the football.
I mean, I think that's what makes sense.
That's the start. And then you've had so much success with play action that it kind of feeds into everything, but it starts there with your young offensive line, right? I mean, think about it. One of the hardest things in the league to do when you're a young player is picking up blitz, twists, stuff like that, working with the guy next to you. You know, you didn't have a lot of that in college. And so to bring in a young player and ask them to do the most difficult thing at his position to start, you're not putting them in a position of success. So what do? You run the football, you have play action, right? All I need for Tyreek and Waddle to have an explosive play is just have one of those idiots in the secondary take one bad step.
Please stop talking. Stop calling them idiots.
That's all football is.
Please stop please stop calling the defense idiots.
They are.
No, just stop doing that. It's not okay. It's not okay for you to keep doing that.
Why?
It's just not nice.
Sometimes the truth hurts. Dude, next time we watch a football game, I'm gonna let you watch. I'm not saying they're not great players or athletic or not. I'm not saying that at all. Right? They're still amongst the elite, and some of them are really good at what they do. But next time we watch a game, I'm going to point out the stuff that when I tell you is silly that nobody pays attention to.
Are you inviting
me? So, for example, Brittany, me and you are playing a game of whatever, right? I know your tendencies, right? The worst thing I can do is yell them to you, right? the defense, they get so consumed with letting everybody know they know what's going on, right, that they call the plays, and the offense is like, oh, we got them, because that ain't the play.
Schmiedin says, doesn't that mean QBs are idiots since they throw interceptions? Boxed in.
No, not necessarily, because some interceptions are just bad throws, not bad decisions.
Are you inviting me to a week one watch party at Casa Horde?
Sure, we can do it.
All right.
We can do it. I'll put the big TV out.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, I'm going to point this stuff out to you, you're going to be like,
I'm like a football sponge, dude.
No, you're not.
I'm a football sponge, dude.
When we watch a football game together, I might as well be watching with Tommy.
It's not fair.
Because he gets – look, I start breaking it down for him, and he gets so, like, just – what? It's like he's
not concussed. True. It's not true. I love it. He's telling lies, Brittany. I'm like this. I'm like,
Seems a little mean, Leroy.
So I'm just telling, like, and I say that, and I say there, because if I know what you're gonna do, I'm gonna keep it between us so I can be successful. Right? I'm not gonna yell what I think they're going to be doing and be wrong, because then you look even more ridiculous.
I'm really bothered right now because I'm seeing on television they just had Dustin Poirier on TV. And why is he an underdog this weekend? I'm very confused by this. He's beaten Max Holloway twice already, and he's fighting in his hometown, and Max Holloway is coming off the worst loss of his career. Why is he an underdog?
So that means we got to ride him.
I'm just very confused by that. Like, and he's, I'm like.
You want to save it till tomorrow?
I guess. I'm just very confused. I'm like, wait, what do you mean he's an underdog? Who, what?
Well, wait a minute. The women fought this past weekend and I asked you the same damn thing.
Yeah, but this would be the opposite. This would be me saying after Katie Taylor won twice and being like, oh, no, this is going to be, like, it would be. Oh, we're going to ride Holloway because he's due. Like, it's the I'm going the opposite on this one. Like, he's lost to him twice.
You said Serrano was going to win. She lost the last two.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, this is flipped. Dustin Poirier's already beaten Max Holloway twice.
Right.
So, like, we're riding the trend. And somehow the trend is the underdog, and I don't understand why.
But you did that. You said Serrano was going to win.
I know what I said!
So why are you getting mad at somebody else doing the same damn thing?
I just think it's weird. Like, what?
Yes, it was weird when you did it last week.
But in fairness, when Serrano when Serrano lost fight number two, a lot of people thought she should have won. Like,
okay.
Max Holloway has gotten dusted by Poirier twice.
Wait. You literally have a problem with you doing the same thing.
I'm not doing the same thing.
Ago.
It's way different.
Wait. So, Katie Taylor beat Serrano twice.
Twice.
And we went in the last week. You go, Serrano's going to win. She probably should have won the last one.
Right.
But she didn't.
But
this week,
by the judges, it was very close. The judges messed it up. So I thought it should have been 1-1.
Okay.
Max Holloway is a true 0-2 against Dustin Poirier.
All right. I'm just saying, like, you can put a little window dressing on your reasoning or whatever, but it really sounds like you just went the totally opposite side that you did.
I'm not going opposite side.
You are.
Just trying to figure it out. Like, why? Poirier lost to Makhachev? He, by the way, that was the closest Makhachev has ever been to losing. He almost beat him. He's not going to lose to Max Holloway.
All right.
Max Holloway just got knocked out for the first time in his career. Bees is saying, oh, he's bigger because he's bigger. He filled out. He wasn't filled out last time. Get out of here, dude. Max Holloway, I mean, like, respectfully, Max Holloway is a great fighter. I love Max Holloway, okay? Really? One of my favorites. Mm-hmm. But it's not Dustin Poirier, okay? This is it. Like, he's good. He's good. All right, Jim Brown, hit. You know, Lawrence Taylor. Like, that's how I feel. And he's an underdog? That's the thing that's crazy. It's not even that Max Holloway can't win. but you're making Dustin Poirier the underdog? That makes no sense.
Dude.
In his hometown?
It is crazy that you were just on the up. For whatever reason, you were on the opposite side of this a week ago.
I feel like I've made my point clear on this.
No, I don't care.
Like I've made my point clear on this.
Wait, so who was the underdog last week?
Katie Taylor.
Right. So you didn't have a problem with her winning the last two fights against these with these two being an underdog. But you do have a problem with Poirier winning the last two fights and being an underdog.
But it would be like Amanda Serrano got knocked out by Katie Taylor, then lost a lopsided decision to Katie Taylor, and you're like, she's due. That's what this is. Like, okay, I'll throw the last fight out or the first fight out because Holloway was a teenager, okay, and they were featherweights, and he submitted them. Fine. Right. We did that last time, but what? They fought, and they fought fairly recently ago, and Dustin Poirier showed himself to be the superior boxer. Size, kiss my ass. Okay. I don't know. What are we doing? Strange to me. Anyway, we'll mix things up.
So Michael Beasley says Max knocked out the dude who slept Dustin with a head kick.
Yeah, but MMA math is stupid. It doesn't work out like that. It doesn't work like that.
Like one, just because why would you were dominant.
Why would you put stock into them fighting Justin Gaethje more so into them fighting each other? I've seen them fight. Weird. Take a break. Back after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Tobin and Leroy here with you, 560 WQAM. Take it, guys, up until 2 here on the program. It's a hump day.
Hump day.
And what a better day to go get the best dry cleaning in South Florida. And for them, you want to use our friends over at A&T Dry Cleaners. The owner's Zara, that's our guy over there. And he wants to take care of our listeners, Leroy. You mentioned Tobin and Leroy when you step into A&T Dry Cleaners. Let me tell you something, my friends. 25% off your order. So what do you got to lose? Call them today, 954-610-9383. That's 954-610-9383, Leroy.
They've been around for 40 years, family owned and run, and they keep it in the family. Whoop, whoop. They can even do same-day sewing. Mama Ara has it on lockdown, so you know you're going to get the best care for your clothes. They can pick them up, drop them off. Woo-hoo! You can do whatever you need. Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Along with that 25%,
yep.
Along with calling Ira, they service all of South Florida, Dade, Broward, and Southern Palm Beach counties. And guess what? When you use A&T Dry Cleaners, you'll never launder your own clothes again.
That's the facts, Jack. So check them on out. Love them. Love Mama Ira. Got to go
Give
visit
them
her
that
soon.
Number one more time.
954-610-9383. Got to get over there soon. I got to get my suit right. Dirty Boxing's coming on up. They just announced yesterday, Leroy, August 29th, returning DBX3. At the Hangar in Miami, got our first title fight going on. The Wolf against Jarzinho Rosenstruck. I got to get a new shirt, though.
All right. Yes. I was getting ready to say that.
I'm going to go shopping, I promise.
You can go same suit, different shirt, tie combination. Nobody will know the difference.
I don't wear a tie. I live in Miami. I don't live in I live in South Florida.
Get a bunch of different shirts.
Is there anybody in South Florida who's still going with a tie? That like nobody does that. What do you? If somebody wears a tie down here, you don't trust them.
Why?
I don't too hot. Especially for this what? Neck. Look at this thing. Look at it. I'm not putting a tire on that. Let's get to the mix bag, huh? All right. The mix bag here on a hump day. Are you familiar, Leroy Horde, with Kalel Ware?
Yes, I am.
Kalel Ware went 3-for-3 from downtown in his last summer league game. I do not know if he's going to play in the finale. I guess I would imagine the Heat are practicing today, and we'll get somewhat of a pulse on that. But he was asked by reporters if he will have the green light in the regular season, and he goes, I'm not sure. Summer league, though, I'm shooting him.
I know you want to play inside, but then sometimes you find yourself on the outside. Do you feel that you kind of have the green light to shoot that when you want to?
Summer league, yeah. summer league, yeah. But you know, like I said, you got to continue to work on it. You know, hopefully it'll be like that, you know, during the season. So
there you go. Kal-El Ware.
Honest Abe.
Honest Kal-El Ware. Eric Spoelstra, he recently spoke about a former young player who's now going into his third season. He was a first-team All-Rookie. Struggled last year. And that is Jaime Jaquez Jr. And at a Heat Summer League practice, Eric Spoelstra spoke about Jaime clearing his mind.
And I just talked about clearing his mind. You know, he spent a good deal of time with us. He spent with Dan and Rob and working on his shooting and working on his player development, working on his body. And then he's going to spend some time in L.A. He's got a phenomenal work ethic. Like, he works out three times a day. You know, I want him to, like, play some pickup, you know, in L.A., play some five-on-five with those things in mind at UCLA, all that stuff, and then come back out, you know, at some point in August, clear mind, ready to kick some ass.
There you go. That was Spo on Jaime Jaquez Jr. You believe in year three Jaime, Leroy?
I just think, like, you know, his rookie year, he didn't really have anything to worry about, right?
Yep.
He could go out and just play hard and whatever. Then he had to deal with some other stuff, you know, and when you're young and you got to deal with other stuff in your sport, whatever that is, either bad shooting percentage, being sick, you know, having to go through injury, things of that nature. Your focus isn't on basketball. It's about being healthy. Yeah. Didn't he have the bubble guts for half the year?
You know, okay, look. I'm a little sick of, you want to talk about being sick? I'm a little sick. I'm a little sick of hearing about the tummy aches, okay? Because you went out, I was sick last year too, okay? Sick of bricks. That's what I was sick of. Okay? I'm going to put it behind me, but if I hear about these tummy troubles anymore, I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of it.
Right.
Brittany, you have any faith in year three Jaime?
No, not really. I feel like, I'm sorry.
I feel like I go to you for, if it's not an F1 racer, Brittany's
no,
going.
That's not true. That's not true. That is not true. That is not true.
I'm keeping
I'm
tabs.
I'm just being honest.
I just
no,
like,
I'm just being honest. I watched a lot of Heat basketball last season because I worked the games. And I just feel like he was in like an incredible liability on the court. I think he hit his ceiling. I think he came off the high of getting drafted and everything like that. I think what the player that we're seeing in him last season is what he's able to offer. And that's just my take. Like, I'm
like,
sorry. I'm not negative Nancy. Don't paint me as a negative Nancy.
Well,
we can't.
I'm not.
We can't. But,
I'm not
but
Debbie Downer on SNL. Like, let's not do this.
We can't take, like, a small snippet of what we think his career is going to be and make that the norm.
No,
right?
I mean,
he's had one good year. He struggled last year. Okay, so we'll see this year whether we see something closer to what his first year was or if we see a continuation of last year.
For
a second year guy to already determine he's done or
I mean,
he can't or that's what he's going to be.
I don't think he's done. I just think we've seen a ceiling. I don't see an improvement. Like with Tyler Hero, when he had his struggles, I could see a world where he would improve and become a player like he is now. I just don't see a world where like Jaime Jaquez is going to have the flip that Tyler Hero had.
I think the trouble for him is like, where is he going to get the ball in his hands? Because that's obviously
he's not a scorer.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, he is with the ball in his hands. Like, that's his thing. He's a driver. He's a downhill guy. And like, how many opportunities are they really going to give him? Right.
And
right.
We already don't have a strong defense. So putting him out there, he's not very good on defense.
Yeah.
So
he actually was worse last year. He was good his first year. I felt like he was pretty decent, and they threw him into the waters. Like, it was like they would throw him on the best player a lot his first
season.
Year. And last year, I just felt like I was watching Jaime Jaquez out of position on both ends of the court a ton.
Exactly. So that's my point. Like, I just feel like there's not a room for him to go into the game when we're already struggling on defense. And if he doesn't find his position on offense and he's not doing well on defense, I think we're going to see another situation like this season where he is on the bench more often than he's on the court.
You know what's crazy?
Hmm?
I had the totally opposite career start as Jaime. And because the 2 years were flipped, people had more positivity with me after my second year, right?
Isn't that what?
Because I struggled my rookie year,
mm-hmm.
and then my second year, I was really good.
Isn't that normal? Like, isn't that how it's supposed to go?
Not necessarily. Sometimes your style of play connotes success early, but then once they get a little idea of what your game is, right, then you have to start becoming more of a professional, making some adjustments, adjust your game. Like, maybe he has to work on his jumper a little bit more because they know he's a driver, so guess what they're going to do? They're going to stop him from driving. Maybe if he only drives to the right. Now, defensively, when they game plan, they're going to try to make him go left. Like, these are all natural kind of things that occur during a career. I'm not going to dismiss the first year because of the struggles he had second year, because he might not be Steph Curry, but he can improve his shooting. There have been guys who have improved shooting because in the offseason, that's all they did was put up shots. I'm going to give him that opportunity before I just say, oh, last year was who he's going to be.
It happens. I think of, like, Josh Richardson became a pretty respectable shooter. Like, he was not a good shooter early on in his career, and the Heat said that he worked on it like crazy. So, and even Spo said, I think, in that same presser, he was like, everybody improves their shooting with us. Like, they're very confident in that. But the things that I wonder about him, if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, is
how
can
he's
bring...
not gonna be a he's not gonna be a spot up shooter.
Yeah, and can he be relentless? Like, I thought one thing about his second year or his first year was he didn't need the ball in his hands. He was cutting. He was making things happen. It was effort plays. And you know who's done a lot of that and I think is going to probably take all his minutes? Pella. That's who I think is going to take. So he's got.
And he shoots the ball for in the beginning. He shoots the ball better.
Better, yeah. It's not like he's not. Like, I honestly think Pella's going to be our Swedish TJ McConnell. That's what I think he's going to be.
Yeah, and the hustle with Pella is just leaps and bounds different than Jaime Hawk is.
Well, see, here's the deal. What Pella has done. And this should be a lesson for all young players. Pella earned his minutes on the floor without scoring.
Yep.
Even though he can score, even though he can do some stuff on the offensive end, his energy and his motor gets him on the floor.
Yeah, I think he just leads Jaime in that dog in him.
Right. So that's kind of where we are. But come on, man. Like, I don't like, people are so like,
what?
Just
people. He's talking about you me, have, Leroy. It's okay.
You have a bad couple of minutes or bad in life. And people are like,
it was more than a couple of minutes, Leroy.
Yeah, but he was sick half the time.
It was twice. Why are you making it a total of two games?
You make it sound like it was one of those like old war movies, like MASH. Like Jaime was sitting there on like one of those cots at every time. He's like, "How did we do tonight, guys? Shh, you rest, Jaime."
He struggled last year. I'm not saying he did, but it's not like it's year five.
It's not year five.
It's year two. It's year two. Now it's year three.
We'll take a break. Speaking of the Heat, we got an update yesterday on the Heat regarding Terry Rozier that I'm very confused about. Take a break. Back after this.